Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome into another edition of Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders. Phone lines are open at 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. Let us know your thoughts. Anything you want to talk about, Chiefs, Royals, NFL, NBA, college sports, we'll try to get to it at some point in this two-hour show. We'll have two special guests joining us in studio in the 10 o'clock hour. We will have What a Moment at 10:25, where we'll be giving away two $20 gift cards to Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen. If you beat me in naming what that moment is, you can come pick up your gift card here at the studio, probably on Monday, because nobody will really be here after us. Mean to let you in. So I'd recommend to come in on Monday or Tuesday. If that is, if you win. So we'll get to those rules later on in the second hour. But to open up the show today, I want to go over this article that ESPN put out. It'll make everybody feel good in Kansas City, because you know what? It feels like in the offseason, we hear all these media talking heads go over who's the best quarterback, and maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't in the top five, just to get interactions, right? Do you have a blow-up type of segment? Or there's articles that come out talking about the best teams in the AFC or maybe projecting division winners, and the Chiefs aren't there. Well, this latest article that came out on ESPN should definitely make you feel good as a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs. It is by Seth Walder, who does research in ESPN analytics, football analytics, that is. Guess who he has as the number one ranked offensive line in the NFL? It's not the Green Bay Packers. It's not the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not Denver. It's not Indianapolis. It is your Chiefs, who are projected going into 2022 as the best offensive line in football. Their projected pass block rank, best in the league, number one. Their predicted run block rank, number five. So top five in the league, but the best pass blocking team in the NFL, which with the scheming and how the Chiefs operate with that scheme, I'd much rather have the number one pass block offensive line than the number one run blocking offensive line. Here's where I stand on it, though, and Blake, I'm curious of your thoughts. I think that Kansas City's offensive line is top five, and how quick of a turnaround they've had since that Super Bowl loss to Tampa Bay, completely overhauling it. Going out and getting Orlando Brown Jr., bringing in Joe Tooney first. Because keep in mind, Joe Tooney was the first puzzle piece to be put in. It was Joe Tooney because they needed to anchor the interior of the line. And I guess understanding how the Chiefs front office operates, they likely thought, we're going to go after Creed Humphrey in the draft. So we want somebody to the left of him that has a lot of experience and is a elite interior lineman. They went out and got Joe Tooney. Then they go out and get Creed Humphrey. They add Trey Smith in the sixth round. They had Lucas Niang. They drafted Lucas Niang the year before, but he sat out due to COVID that year. But came back in 2021 and was going to start at right tackle. They add Orlando Brown Jr. So that offensive line that was riddled with injuries went from a middle of the pack when healthy, when hurt, bottom five offensive line, to now what we could consider to be the best offensive line in football. Here's where I'll stand, though, with the current group. You know you'll have OBJ at left tackle. You know you'll have Tooney at left guard. Creed Humphrey at center. Trey Smith at right guard. Those positions are set. My question is, Can you have the best offensive line in football when right tackle is a little bit of a question mark? Because my guess now is it's going to be Andrew Wiley. I thought at first it'd be Darian Kennard. I haven't heard too much of Darian Kennard. And I think in the way Trey Smith completely took over camp last year, like everybody was talking about Trey Smith. And it was the position battle between him and LDT. And he just dominated LDT. And Kyle Long was hurt. So we all thought around this time last year, Trey Smith was going to be a starter. At right tackle right now, I'm not hearing enough buzz around Darian Kennard. He may be a second-year guy. No, he plays behind Andrew Wiley. That's fine. I think Andrew Wiley's a fine right tackle. Like, if the Chiefs roll out week one, and there's Wiley lining up on the right side, I'm not going to complain. I have no issues with that because he's been a stable tackle. He's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. He's moved around. He's a swing tackle. Now, Jerron Christian, you can enter his name into that. Will Lucas Niang be healthy? Well, it's very doubtful now that he hasn't really played in camp. And if you don't have a full camp, I don't know if I'm going to put you in the starting spot for right tackle. But Blake, you gave an emphatic nod, yes, that is, so that you can be the best offensive line in football when you don't even know who your starting right tackle is going to be. I'm sure the Chiefs know, but the rest of the public doesn't. So why can you be the best offensive line at football where you have four of your five guys set, but that fifth guy at an important position is kind of up in the air?
The reason I think that you are definitely allowed to have the best offensive line with one question mark, and I'll say question mark at right tackle because even though it is an extremely important position, all five are, if you have a great four all together, that one, especially on the left outside, because the left side is going to be your most important. It's blocking Patrick Mahomes' blind side. Lawrence Taylor, thank you. Then you have your interior across the board. So there's a chain link fence right now, and really the only issue is right on the end. It's not in the middle. You're not going to have any breaks up the middle of that chain. It's just a little questionable on the right hand side. Now I have a lot of faith in Andrew Wiley. We have seen time and time again that he has proven that he is capable of playing almost any position when asked, wherever he's asked to play. But my big reasoning is also this. Back in the early 2000s with the Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion, in a lot of people's opinion, they hands down had the best offensive line in the league. You had Willie Rofe at left tackle, Brian Waters at left guard, Casey Wigman at center, right guard was Will Shields. That's a great lineup.
How many of those guys in the Chiefs Ring of Honor? All of them are.
Every single one of them are.
Okay.
So, can you tell me who played right tackle in that span?
Oh, that's a damn good question.
Of when those guys were absolutely at their peak, dominating in the NFL. Do you know who played right tackle for the Chiefs then?
I can't say I do.
You can't, can you? I'll give you a couple different names because it was a revolving door. You have guys like John Tate. You have Jordan Black. You have Chris Terry. Any of these names ringing a bell for you? A late end Kyle Turley.
Man, not it's not loudly ringing, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I kind of recognize those names. I don't really remember it, though.
Exactly, because it didn't matter at that time. It was a revolving door of right tackles. Seemed to last every 1 or 2 years, and they'd get a new one because it just wasn't holding up. Didn't matter because the Chiefs still had the best offensive line in the league with Willie Rofe, Brian Waters, Casey Wigman, and Will Shields. And when I look at what the Chiefs have amassed at their offensive line right now, am I saying that Orlando Brown is Willie Rofe? No, I'm not. But Orlando Brown is one of the best tackles in the entire NFL. So we'll chalk it up to that. Is Joe Tooney Brian Waters? No. Again, this is a Hall of Fame line right here.
It really is.
So I know I'm comparing them to a
I can say that when you want to compare, I don't mean to cut you off here.
No, go ahead.
They have similar nastiness.
Yes.
That's where I think you can compare. Yeah.
That's what I'm going for. Just that dirty grit, the way they all play, how well they mesh together. Brian Waters and Joe Tooney, not really on the same page, but Joe Tooney, again, is one of the best left guards. So I'm taking it based off how good these guys are in the league that they play in currently right now, not based on former Hall of Famers. But in the league right now, Joe Tooney is one of the best left tackles. Creed Humphrey is quickly and not quietly becoming one of the best centers in all of football. that was Casey Wigman as well. And Casey Wigman was the anchor. He was the keystone in this arc of the offensive line that held everything together. Okay? The absolute nastiness, he was running the show. Then on the right-hand side, you had Will Shields. Will Shields was finesse, but he was a dog. Well, guess what Trey Smith is? An absolute dog. And he, I don't think he's one of the best right guards in tackle, or right guards in football just yet.
But he was a sixth-round pick.
And guess what? I think this year you're going to see exactly why he is going to become one of the best right guards in all of football. So I'm not that worried. And honestly, I have more faith in Andrew Wiley than any of the tape that I saw on Chris Terry, Jordan Black, John Tate. That revolving fifth guy in that Chiefs offensive line dominant early era. I've got more faith in Andrew Wiley right now. I even have faith in Kennard, hopefully going forward. We haven't gotten to see him play. What I have seen from Niang is good. It's just the injury bug, a little bit of here, a little bit of there. But honestly, I would say I'm more confident right now in that right tackle position than I would have on this offensive line that was a Hall of Fame offensive line. You know what I mean? So that's why I think that the argument can be made that you can 100% be the best line in the NFL without having a solid right tackle.
That might have been one of your best arguments I think you've ever had on the show.
Thank you.
Because to find that comparison that quickly, by the way, I did not ramble on 15 minutes and give you time to research that. Like, you had that in your head before we started, which is
great. I came guns a-blazing today,
good.
Jack.
No, I love how you turned to that, because that now has changed my opinion. That, man, not many teams in the NFL have four, like, let alone three, like, solid offensive linemen. And I think with Kansas City, when you're looking at Orlando Brown Jr. being, quote-unquote, well, he's not one of the best tackles in the league, but he's really kind of is.
I mean, but is
like
he
one of the best one of the best linemen in the league, but he's one of the best tackles, which that's fine at left tackle. You're protecting Mahomes' blind side. And Andrew Wiley, he's not the star-studded guy that everybody goes, oh, pay him the big bucks because he's one of the best right tackles. But do we all remember in the COVID year when he just punked Cam Jordan?
Was it he who also punked Max Crosby, or was that Allegretti? Yeah.
It was Max Crosby. Yeah, it was
two all-stars.
He does it quietly too. He'll come in, he'll slide into the offensive rotation, that line group, and he'll take on a Max Crosby or a Cam Jordan. And no, he's not really showing up because those guys aren't doing much. And Max Crosby, I think in that game, had a personal foul because he was pissed at how Andrew Wiley was holding down the fort. He got Cam Jordan a personal foul, and I think that's exactly the mentality that you want for a right tackle. They don't need to be the hulking 6'8", 340 that Orlando Brown Jr. is. But if you're Andrew Wiley, who's, I believe, from Eastern Michigan, so I want to say it was an undrafted free agent.
He
correct
played
me if I'm wrong.
Against Max Crosby at Eastern Michigan.
That's correct.
That's why it was such an interesting battle between those two.
And he doesn't really, like, when you talk about the Chiefs offensive line, you usually go OBJ. You talk about Joe Tooney, if you're into interior guards. Talk about Creed Humphrey. You talk about the unbelievable aggressiveness that Trey Smith has, wanting to knock your head off. And Andrew Wiley kind of just is there. But he's damn good at what he does. And I think why I'm so comfortable with not only the offensive line, but the depth, is go back to that Cincinnati game. They lost in Cincinnati. But you remember how many pieces they had to move around? Like, Orlando Brown Jr. got hurt in warmups. Or he was battling the calf injury? It was a leg injury that he didn't feel good to start in warmups, so they couldn't play him. So what the Chiefs did is they started, I want to say it was Wiley. It was Wiley at left tackle, and Lucas Niang was at right tackle. No, excuse me. They started Niang at left tackle, then Niang got hurt, then Tooney had to slide out to left tackle. So they went through three left tackles in the game. But still, that offensive line held its own. And when you look at Lucas Niang, Darian Kennard, Jerron Christian, is it Roderick Johnson too? I think Roderick Johnson they brought in the offseason as well. You have pieces there that, no, aren't going to be big-time starters, but you need swing guys. You need guys that can play left tackle, right tackle. I mean, Joe Tooney can play the interior and at a tackle position. You know, Trey Smith could probably slide into left guard. And when you have these interchangeable pieces, it can make you build up this offensive line a lot quicker than what many people believe it to be.
At the same time, we still do have Nick Allegretti.
Yeah. Allegretti can come in at it.
He hasn't. I feel
former
like
wrestler
he hasn't
as well,
gotten,
too.
And those make the best offensive linemen. That's what I said about well, when I do my draft analysis, I always talk about the wrestling aspect. But we have not talked about Allegretti at all. Great sub and can come in and start when needed and asked upon. Not, I wouldn't say a 17-game starter typically, but also, he's got mad hands, can catch touchdowns.
That is true. Big man touchdown. playoff touchdown as well.
There you go. So it's funny to look at how – I'm sorry if I cut you off in your point that you were making.
I cut you off earlier, so now we're one for
cool,
one.
Cool, we're one for one. It's funny to look at how the Chiefs had overhauled such a bad offensive line in such a quick turnaround. One off season, they went from getting absolutely – mauled,
but can we
in the
blame
Super Bowl.
They were second and third strings.
No, I don't blame them at all. That's what I'm saying. The biggest weakness that I think that was really went under the radar and unaddressed for the Chiefs that year was their offensive line. They had so many injuries. I mean, Eric Fisher and Schwartz were both injured.
They were getting older too.
They were also getting older at the tail end of their careers. They had so many injury issues. Everything else underneath, you know, on the base layer, and then what can we even say then? How many? You know, we're talking about four all-star starters right now for the Chiefs. How many did we have then? Two? Really,
Fisher and Schwartz, because on the interior, in the Super Bowl, when they beat San Francisco, was it their starting center, Wisniewski?
Yeah, you brought Stefan Wisniewski in from the Jags.
Or yeah, something like that, or it was Pittsburgh. I can't really remember. I know he went to
Jags.
Pittsburgh after that. It was Jags?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was Wisniewski. I think Allegretti played, too.
I think Allegretti played. I think Wiley,
I think, was a guard.
So, I mean, now you look at the...
Austin Ryder.
Austin. See? So you have all these guys, and then the Kansas City said, hey, the number one thing we're going to do is overhaul offensive line. Now, normally, for a regular organization, you might get two guys the next year to really come in and bolster that offensive line. You might get a big-time free agent signing, and you might hit a home run in the draft. The Chiefs not only hit two big-time free agent signings. Well, I guess one was a trade. One trade.
We'll count it.
You brought in an off-season acquisition, and you brought in Thuney. Boom, boom. There's your two, and they've panned out incredibly. Oh, then you hit back-to-back home runs with Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Trey Smith in the sixth round.
If you ever want to give the Pittsburgh Steelers a hell of a lot of credit, and if you've never really been like, well, why would I give Pittsburgh credit? They took Pat Freiermuth before Creed Humphrey, and they needed the center, by the way. And I was convinced Creed Humphrey was going to Pittsburgh in that draft. Like, when they came around, I thought, that's the perfect fit. They passed on him, and he fell right into the Chiefs' lap after they took Nick Bolton. So, to me, that might have been one of the best off seasons the Chiefs have ever had. In overhauling a unit, as Blake pointed out, I mean, you could make a case this year that four of those guys could make the Pro Bowl, a couple could make All-Pro. Like, Creed Humphrey last year absolutely should have been an All-Pro. Correct me if I'm wrong, Blake, he was the highest-graded center in football last year. I mean, his PFF grade was north of 90. I don't believe that anybody really came that close to Creed Humphrey.
His PFF grade was 97.7.
Overall?
Yeah.
That's damn near Trent Williams level.
The top pass blocking center, 97.7%.
Okay, so pass blocking. What was his overall PFF grade? Couldn't have been 97, because I think Trent Williams is the only one to go into that uncharted territory.
He was the top pass blocker. I don't know what his...
Is it locked on there for you? Because I know you have to pay a little bit for PFF.
No, I'm not on PFF. I'm on... This is taking their PFF grades, though, but it's written in an article.
Oh, gotcha.
Adam Teicher.
Yeah, I think Creed Humphrey, for the most part, was above 90. I think it was low 90s was his final season grade. But pass blocking to me is important, especially for a center.
Okay, so check this out. This is their pass blocking grades overall. Okay. Creed Humphrey, 97.7. Tooney, 96.6. And Trey Smith was 96 overall.
Oh, my Lord.
And this is strictly pass blocking, but still. That's what the Chiefs did.
What was Orlando Brown Jr.? Is he listed on there?
It's not listed.
Man. So the three interior guys you couldn't get through on. And I've mentioned this before. I don't remember if it was on this show or on 1510. But Chris Jones, so I'll tie this into the defense and talking about the offensive line. When Chris Jones is on one of his heaters, and he has four pressures a game, maybe two sacks. You know how much it discombobulates a quarterback when you have pressure from the middle? Like, you all know that from time to time in the game, the edge rusher is going to get to you. Maybe not sack you, but he's going to put you under pressure. You just know that as a quarterback, whether it be from your blind side or he's coming straight at you. What's rare is when you face a defensive line that can get pressure up the middle. And that completely discombobulates not only quarterback, the offense. They don't know how to stop it at that point. That's how you've seen when Chris Jones takes over games, the defense as a whole plays much better. Because what happens, right, when you pressure up the middle, depending on where Chris Jones is coming from, you force him to one side of the field. They have to make a quick decision. You know, it's more of a decision to them. It's, do I roll out right, do I roll out left? If you're pressured from your blind side, you got to roll out right if you're a right-handed quarterback.
Or you step up in the pocket.
Or you step
That's
up.
The big thing is...
But you can't step up if you're getting pressure up the middle.
Up the middle pressure takes away any step up, which is usually how you avoid the edge rushers.
And Chris Jones is, what, 6'7", 310 pounds?
Something like that.
So he's a grizzly bear running towards you. So you, in a split decision, have to make the perfect play, really. Now, at times it's tough for a nose tackle when you're coming up the middle to get the sack unless they just don't really see you coming at the last minute because they can go a couple different ways. Right, so if you're going straight at them, they can go right, left, back. They're able to juke a guy sometimes that's a lot bigger than them. But the positive is if you get pressure at the middle, maybe you force them into a sack by the edge rusher.
The edge rusher, exactly.
For Kansas City's offensive line, what that's telling me right now with the pass block, all being above 95 with Trey Smith, Joe Tooney, and Creed Humphrey, is that nobody is getting up the middle on them.
That's that chain.
And that allows Patrick Mahomes to stay comfortable. In Orlando, if we're going, man, well, the weak spot could be Orlando Brown Jr., Andrew Wiley. I'm okay with that. That checks a lot of boxes for me that that's my offensive line.
So the Chiefs were second last season in pass block win rate, which was 67.8%. But a stat that I didn't realize, and that is actually a little surprising, they were third in run block win rate as well. So they were second in pass block, third in run block in the entire league, and run block was 74%.
That's why Andy Reid can make any running back really good. That's why Jerick McKinnon, after basically not playing the whole year,
averaged like 6.4 yards carry.
Yeah, it was ridiculous because that offensive line playing behind them, and you can scheme around that. When there's a weak spot on the offensive line, you can't really run those screens. You can't really run those, you know, tosses really
you
well.
You can't run the outside zone plays either if you have weak guard play.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be able to get across the tackle's face.
And I would have thought from this article, maybe they've fallen off, which clearly according to this article they have. I always thought Indianapolis had the best offensive line in football, if not the Browns. But I think they fell off quite a bit because they're not in the top four. It's Kansas City, it's Green Bay, then it's Philadelphia, then it's Denver. So
wasn't Denver just one of the worst just, what, 2 years ago? They've got them all the way back up?
I think so. That also has been from Garrett Bowles turning into a very good left tackle after he struggled early on in his career.
He led the league in offsides or holding penalties.
Mm-hmm. But with this, I mean, it's an analytical approach too here by Seth Walter because it's pass block win rate, run block win rate, and the Chiefs were, as you mentioned, great in that. They were second in pass block win rate. They were third in run block win rate. Yeah, the Baltimore Ravens are fifth. Cardinals are sixth. Commanders are seventh. Browns are eighth. Colts are ninth.
I guess a lot of people got up on the Colts because, one, Quentin Nelson was an absolute stud. Anthony Cassano. But
Braden Smith as well, local guy.
But, yeah, they must not be. I mean, I guess after last year, they got a downgrade because now that I don't know if that was more on the bad offensive line play or horrible quarterback play from Carson Wentz.
I thought Carson Wentz was fine through the first 7 or 8 weeks, and then it caught up to him. But didn't he start his season like 17 touchdowns, one pick? Maybe it wasn't that high.
It wasn't that high, but they did start well.
And then it tailed off after that. Here's where I'm curious too, jumping to some other good teams in the league. Super Bowl champs, the LA Rams. According to this article, the 12th best offensive line. With an aging quarterback and one that's not been healthy in camp,
They also lost Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah.
So that's a big detriment.
Colin Cowherd, I was watching The Herd yesterday, and Colin Cowherd had five bold predictions. One of them was the Rams repeating. Matt Stafford has been healthy at training camp, and now when I look at this, the 12th best offensive line, it gives me reason to worry. Now, they brought in Allen Robinson to pair with Cooper Kupp. So, to me, it's still a ridiculous...
And OBJ.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous...
Receiving core.
Receiving core, great quarterback play, and aren't they bringing back Cam Akers, who tore his ACL last year?
Yeah, we'll see on that.
You're not high on Cam Akers?
No.
A little meh?
Yeah, he's
okay. So
he's an average running back.
The Rams are 12th here. Here's another interesting one, and they've been riddled in camp with injuries. Tampa Bay, 15th best offensive line in football. Not in the top half.
I couldn't name one offensive lineman for him.
You know, I mean, Tristan Wirfs.
Ah, okay, Wirfs.
But, yeah, he hurt himself last year in the postseason game.
Didn't he just get hurt the other day, too?
Yeah, you look at, here's their offensive line right now, the projected starters. This is factoring in that they lost Ryan Jensen. Remember, that was carted off the field. Then it was, I'm blanking on his name right now, he retired, Marpet. Ollie Marpet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Retired. So this is their offensive line now. Donovan Smith, Luke Godecki, Robert Hainsey, Shaq Mason, Tristan Wirfs. That could be Tom Brady's last offensive line he ever plays with, 15th best in the league. That, I think, was how Tom Brady was able to get to the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay the first time. Great offensive line and great defensive line. Just great up front all the way around. Now, not so much. Then you have Buffalo, 17th best offensive line in football.
Really?
Bottom half. Deion Dawkins, Roger Saffold, Mitch Morse, former Chief, former Tiger. Ryan Bates, Spencer Brown.
I was going to say, Morse is probably the best one on that line, and Dawkins was the guy that just wants to fight all the Chiefs players.
That is true. How about this for the Buffalo Bills? They have a predicted run block rank of 26.
Ranked 26th or 26%?
Ranked 26th in the league.
Wow.
In run block rank. Cincinnati Bengals, 18th. That doesn't really shock me. They've upgraded, actually, from where they were. They were one of the worst offensive lines last year and still made it to the damn Super Bowl. But their predicted pass block rank for Joe Burrow, 20th. Let's just go down the list a little bit further here. L.A. Chargers, you know where their offensive line ranks? 23rd.
Well, according to everybody, just like every year, they're going to be the AFC West champions. So.
Yeah, but now it
With
looks
that
like...
that offensive line, they got a good D-line.
Rashawn Slater. They have Storm Norton, Corey Linsley, and Zion Johnson they took out of Boston College in the first round. Young guys, but still, I think we always don't give enough credit. Or I would say always. We just don't give enough credit to how Brett Veach revamped this offensive line in 1 year. Realistically, 1 year. It took 1 year.
Realistically, 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
Not even
and
a full did it, season.
And got every... for. Multiple years, too. Like, if they re-sign Orlando Brown Jr., yeah, that's one thing. But they have Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Joe Tooney for next couple of years.
He hit a home run, essentially, on 4 out of 5.
And that's damn near impossible. You're talking about Cincinnati. They were all offense. I remember all the Cincinnati fans on Twitter saying, oh, we could overhaul our offensive line just like the Chiefs did.
Good luck.
Moved up to, what did I say, 18? Yeah, 18.
That's an 80% success rate. 4 out of 5.
And even Andrew Wiley could be a for sure starting right tackle for any other team in the league. I mean, anybody in the bottom half of the league, you could slide in Andrew Wiley immediately. There'd be no competition. But the fact that the Chiefs have one competition spot, and they're guys that can all get behind here. Andrew Wiley, Lucas Niang, Darian Kennard, Roderick Johnson, Jerron Christian. All those guys, I would be just fine with them starting on Sundays. But there you have it. According to ESPN, according to Seth Walder, the number one offensive line in football, or at least predicted to be the number one offensive line in football, your Kansas City Chiefs. All right, we're going to take our first break of the first hour. When we come back, we have some Royals talk, and more importantly, we're going to talk about Salvador Perez and what he's been doing since his return from surgery. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders. So you informed me before the show today that you finally saw Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, I did. After, like, it's been out like 2 months.
I've yet to see it. So, but I think I'm also in the minority with that. And I think if a movie's been out for 2 months, that if somebody spoils it for you, you can't really be mad.
You can't be mad at all.
Because what's the threshold for it? A month? If it's a big-time movie, I feel like it's a month.
Some guys, I heard some of the guys in the morning show, they're like, we'll give you 3 weeks. I'm like,
I think for a big-time movie, I think 3 weeks is acceptable.
That's not bad.
You can find the time. I'm saying that, too, as somebody that hasn't gone and seen it yet. I still haven't seen the Elvis movie.
Oh, dude, the Elvis movie was also killer. I didn't stop moving. I'm a leg shaker. Did not stop moving my feet that whole time. I was, like, getting it in my chair, in my recliner.
It was hitting your soul.
Dude, it was totally soulful.
See, now I got to go. I got to find the time to do it, like, next week. I don't care if I have to go by myself. Is it acceptable to go to a movie theater by yourself?
100%. I think that's one thing that gets frowned upon, that going to a movie theater by yourself, that's your own time. Because you enjoy the ambiance of the movie. You know, you get your little popcorn, maybe you get a little dog or nacho action, get a drink. Who knows? Maybe you go to a fancy movie theater. You can get yourself a beer or a glass of wine or something. Sit down, bring a blanket, and you're just chilling. You're not bothered by anybody. You're not worried about anybody. Nobody's asking you questions. Nobody's getting up to go. No. You just got that seat by yourself. You're watching it. You're feeling good.
I guess I could avoid. See, it's for me, I would hate. It's kind of like when you go to a restaurant and they're like table for one. I can't get over that. And it's like buying one ticket for myself. I couldn't get past it. Maybe I can buy it online, though.
That's I can walk you just in. Just go sit at the bar.
What if the bar's full? Leave the restaurant?
Yeah, you just walk out.
Yeah, I was going to say. I'm somebody that needs somebody else there with me to go to a movie theater or a restaurant. I can't go by myself.
No, next time you walk into a restaurant and you're going in just by yourself, just put your arm up over like somebody's with you and just be like, yeah, table for two, please.
Oh, see,
but just keep your arm there and just look at the reaction the waiter gives you. They're just like, are you
together?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I guarantee they won't even ask you anything.
No, they wouldn't.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
Oh, well.
This guy's crazy.
I got to find the time to grow up and mature and realize that it's okay to go eat by yourself or go to a movie theater by yourself. Because if not, I'm never going to be able to go to this damn movie because none of my friends are ever available to go see during the week to go see it.
Yeah.
I'm always going out on weekends.
Well, Top Gun Maverick was definitely one to go see. Again, we're behind the times. I don't care. Still talking about it. Super freaking cool. It was way better. Everybody wanted to talk it up, and I was like, okay, cool. It's been hyped
up.
Sequels
are tough to make really good,
too.
Dude,
so hard, but it was...
Like, Godfather is a really good sequel. Multiple sequels, in my opinion.
Lord of the Rings was amazing, but that's a trilogy, technically.
Yeah, a trilogy is kind of tougher, but yeah, in general, it's tough to make a damn good sequel, and I feel like from all the reviews I've gotten, that Top
totally
Gun Maverick has been it.
Totally worth it. All the times they could have made it super cheesy, they didn't, and that was great.
I got it, yep.
It was like,
see it
you
now.
Could see it going down a path where it's like, oh, up comes, it could have been a cheesy moment right there. Nope, swerve, something cool happens. I was like, oh,
damn.
Great, awesome.
And I love the first Top Gun, so yeah. I got to find the time to go do it. But last night, I wasn't doing anything. I had to dog sit for my roommate's girlfriend's dog. Because my roommate was working. He's watching the dog, but of course, he's my roommate. So I watched the dog last night. So I had the chance to just watch the Royals game. Why not? I had binged all my shows at that point. So I go, you know what? I'm doing nothing else. Granky's on the bump. I think the Royals can go for a split in this series. I always felt confident, too, that every time the Royals win the series opener, they've won their last, has it been, at least at home, they've won... I think four straight series openers at home because they beat Tampa Bay, or excuse me, they beat the Angels home opener. Maybe it's only been two. These series are compiling together here. They won the opener against the White Sox on the road, then lost the next two. They won against the Red Sox in the home opener, then lost last night 7-3. It was a frustrating game to me, and I think my frustration peaked last night when it was the fourth inning, I believe. It was the fourth inning. Greinke ran into a little bit of trouble. It was second and third, one out. And instead of pitching to Reese McGuire, who is a backup catcher, the Royals decide to pitch to JD Martinez. And with Zach Greinke in the bump, who's not a strikeout pitcher this year. You're not going for the punch out here. You're hoping that J.D. Martinez pops one up, or he rolls one straight to the infield, which was drawn in. The Royals ignore that philosophy because intentionally walking somebody in the fourth inning is just absurd. But, of course, Zach Greinke hangs a curveball. J.D. Martinez pounds it off the wall in left center, 3-0. You knew at that point it's going to be a stretch for the Royals to win this game. But another cool moment happened last night, and that was Salvador Perez unloaded on another pitch and clubbed his fifth home run in 8 games. He's played in 8 games since recovering from UCL thumb surgery, which I think by most human standards would be pretty tough to do. To have that same power, that swing power, to grip the bat the same. Now, for Salvador Perez, he's probably going, this is the best it's ever felt in my hand all season, because it was hurting before that. And last night, that ball, I think, hit I-70.
Oh, it smashed into the Royals Hall of Fame Museum. It exited at a velocity of 112 miles an hour. It was 452 total feet.
Also, I want to call BS on his home run in Chicago when they listed it at 450. That was easily 525 feet.
It was out.
Never seen a ball land where it did a guaranteed right field. Never. I have never seen it clear the batter's eye, the ivy, and the staircase in center field. And what's great, too, is neither the White Sox announcers. The White Sox announcers go, I don't think baseballs are supposed to land up there. which is true. And Salvi, he's just not human.
Well, and it just goes to show you that it was clearly bothering him. It wasn't. So coming off of last season, a miraculous season, 48 home runs, absolutely took the league by storm with his hitting power. Now, everybody knew that Salvi was a great catcher. But what he did with the bat last year, what he did in the All-Star game, in the home run derby, all of that was fantastic. The beginning of this year, you kind of started to think, hey, maybe it was a one-off season. You're still a good home run hitter. You're still a good batter, but maybe it was a one-off. Okay, then you start hearing rumblings about his thumb being hurt, and you go, okay, well, that we'll give you a little bit of pass for that. And then he goes and he has surgery for it. He misses, what, 8 weeks?
It was about
Six
that time
weeks,
for him, yeah.
Weeks.
It was a lot short. I thought he was going to be out for the year.
I thought he was, too. I really did. I thought we might maybe see him at the end, and if they didn't shelve him. He comes back after the All-Star game, or after the All-Star break. Brand new hand, brand new thumb, feeling good, picking up right where he left off in 2021, because he is smashing the ball right now. And it looks like all the home runs he hit last year. I mean, just getting a hold of these.
I think the Royals have, what is it now? They are 42-65.
42-64?
They are 42-65. Yep, so they have played in 107 games. So they have 55 games left. So Salvi's going to have just over about 100 games played this year. Wouldn't be shocked to see him have 25 plus homers. He's at 16 now. I don't see why in the next 55 games. If he's hitting 5 in 8 games, he may damn near reach 30.
How many games? 55 left?
55 games left. And he's at 16. He would need 9 more to get to 25. I think he'd easily hit 14 more in those 55 games. I mean, why not? He's on a hot stretch right now. He's seen the ball really well. Now, most of his hits have been home runs, but that's Salvador Perez.
He's on pace to hit 33 home runs the rest of the season if he keeps this pace up.
And that's ridiculous. Because then you think about if he was healthy all season long.
Yeah.
And he got into a groove, because I think he started the season. He was the last Royal in that lineup to get a hit.
I think he would have been, had he been healthy from the beginning,
again.
He would have gotten 40 plus.
He would have been the home run derby and
for
hopefully
sure.
Not faced Pete Alonso. But to me.
Three Pete.
This is why, yeah. Well, came short this time.
Yeah, this year, but oh,
he would.
Right.
Yeah, he came short or fell short to. Was it? It was either Soto or Julio. Can't remember which one it was. I think it was Soto that knocked him out. But nonetheless, he was knocked out, and Pete Alonso didn't get his three-peat after lifting weights down in the underground area and tuned in, zoned in. Just he takes it seriously, which I do think is fun. When it's kind of like the WWE, like you have one specific thing you're really focused on and want to win badly, and Pete Alonso did that. Now, I'll never forgive him for having an extended interview during Salvador Perez's unbelievable tear in the home run derby at Coors Field.
That was ESPN's fault.
I would have declined the interview, said, excuse me, sir, something incredible is going on right here. I'm just kidding. But Salvador Perez, this is why, number one, he's going to be a Royal for life. The Royals are never going to trade him away. He's getting up there now. What is he? 32, 33. He's going to play out the rest of his contract, and the Rose is going to bring him back. Like, there's always going to be a spot for Salvador Perez. The encouraging thing is, though, that I truly do believe Salvador Perez can play into his age 36, 37 season and still be a productive bat.
Well, it's weird. How do you hit your batting prime and your power prime at 31, 32 years old?
I think that it was from having the Tommy John surgery, having all of 2019 off, that rekindled, brought in that power to a level we've never seen because he got to rest.
Yeah.
Because what's the one thing that
he's
I
never
will
been
criticize Ned Yost for, which I can't really criticize Ned Yost that harshly because they got a damn World Series out of him, back-to-back AL pennants.
But Salvi's also the guy who's always clamoring to play. Always saying, hey, no, I'm playing. I play baseball today.
Yes.
That's how he sounds.
Yes. That's exactly what he wants to play baseball every single day. He loves it, and that's what you want in your face of the franchise. No matter how bad they are, he wants to be out there. He knows it's a child's game, and he loves playing it. Everybody that plays baseball can have different feelings towards it. You know, you can see it as a job, you want it for the money, or you can play it because you truly enjoy it. And Salvador Perez thoroughly enjoys the game of baseball. You can see it. But he's also damn good at what he does. But back in 2012, 13, 14, he caught 140 to 145 games a year. And if Salvador Perez was 6 foot, a buck 80, I wouldn't be batting an eye. The man is 6'3", 240 pounds. He's a big man. Like, I've been down in the Royals clubhouse a handful of times this year when I've been covering games on Wednesday night. Salvi's a big dude.
He's almost Josh Allen-like. He's not as tall as Josh Allen, but that weight.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a big boy.
When you look, I mean, and I think football players are obviously way bigger than baseball
players,
but you find a 6'3", 240-pound man, like, that's a massive human being. And the fact that he's having to squat behind the plate for, let's say, 2 hours a game, maybe a little bit over that. I'd say a little bit less, depending on how fast the game rolls around. But, man, Salvador Perez continues to impress me. And he's so hitterish. All he does is hit. Now, I know he has some big swing and miss stuff at times. That's Salvador Perez. He's a bad ball hitter. He's never going to walk. He's never been an OBP guy. And that's just who he is. He's not going to change that about himself. At age 32, age 33, this is Salvador Perez. But it's a matter of what you want. It's a matter of, will you take Salvador Perez, like last year, hitting 48 bombs, but maybe having an on-base percentage of .310? Or would you take the guy that gets on base all the time, has the great framing skills, but doesn't really have much pop? I think most Royals fans would be okay with the power. And Salvador Perez is a guy that I think you can slide into that lineup for the next 3 to 4 years and still be productive. Now, it's a matter of durability. Can he stay healthy? And I think if they can get him off his feet and DH him a lot more moving forward, I'd be on board with it. But it also comes down to, can MJ Melendez handle the catching responsibilities? And MJ Melendez defensively right now has not been good anywhere.
Well, even if you cut his games in half, you give MJ half, you give Salvi half. That's got to take such a load off Salvi's shoulders where he can just focus on hitting.
Yeah, and that's why for the large part of last season.
Now it's, do you want to give MJ Melendez 82 games is the question.
And the fact that they are playing him in right field and left field and he had an error last night and he misplayed a ball in the corner. I mean, that's going to happen because the kid did not play the outfield in the minor leagues.
Well, and they've been playing him all over the place.
And that's, you're going to see those growing pains. Not everybody can make that transition from wherever they played originally to the outfield like Alex Gordon did. Like, Alex Gordon seamlessly made that transition from third base to the outfield. Now, Alex Gordon, when he got brought up, he played right field. I think his first chance back up in Kansas City to play the outfield was in right field. And then he moved over to left field.
Found out he was a 7-time Gold Glove winner.
I mean, just platinum Gold Glove winner. It was ridiculous. MJ Melendez likely doesn't have that type of ceiling because he's a catcher. He's got a cannon for an arm. But MJ Melendez's place will always be behind the plate. It's a matter of, when did the Royals feel comfortable handing over the reins of catching responsibilities to MJ Melendez? And I actually am on board of how Mike Matheny is constructing this lineup. I am actually one of those people that believe that Bobby Witt Jr. should be a third baseman. Because before he made that move back to shortstop, Bobby Witt Jr. was elite defensively at third base. And Nicky Lopez should have been a Gold Glover last year, so I feel fine with Nicky Lopez being the shortstop of this team even next year. You know, you have Michael Massey at second base, Bobby Witt Jr. at third. I'm okay with seeing if Nick Prado and MJ Melendez can play the outfield, because what it does is it gives you flexibility, right? If you, the Royals, by the way, next offseason are going to have a blank ton of money to spend if they wanted to, right? We'll see how John Sherman is with opening up the checkbook, how much he's willing to give the front office to go out and spend money. You look about who they traded away and who are guys that are on the payroll for next season. Hunter Dozier, Salvador Perez, Michael A. Taylor, and a couple of one-year deal guys like Amir Garrett. Like, they got a lot of rookies now, which means if you can find the flexibility there, right? If Nick Prado can play left field, and let's say Vinny Pasquantino can play first base, or MJ Melendez can play the outfield, then you can really, when you get competitive, you can piece together a lineup and go after big-name free agents that maybe can only play one position, but you can move around guys that are still in your core to fit that lineup.
In your opinion, what would be a position that you would want to hunt after for the Kansas City Royals? Is it somebody to play second base? Is it somebody to play center field?
I think for next year, I mean, if they didn't trade away Michael A. Taylor, Michael A. Taylor is the center fielder next year.
Okay.
Which, again, I was on board of trading him because I think he could have provided a lot of value to somebody out there. And from what the market was this year to the deadline, I don't know why they didn't. The Royals do need a center fielder of the future. Michael A. Taylor's not that, because I think after next year, he won't be the center fielder.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt to have a Gold Glover in center field, but you'd like to have somebody with a little bit more pop to the bat. Although for most of the season, he's been one of the top
production hitters. He's had a career season.
Yeah.
He's had a career season.
It's just not sustainable, I don't think.
No, it's not sustainable. And I would say that if the Royals need to spend money, by far and away, it's going out and getting a number one. They need to go out and get a number one pitcher. They brought 100%. In Zach Greinke, but Zach Greinke at age 38 is not going to be a number one of any staff.
Well, and
in
if
baseball.
You bring Zach Greinke back next year,
that's fine. If it's a 1 year, $3 million
deal. But listen, if you have Zach Greinke back next year, Singer right now is on fire, okay? We can all say that. Lately, he's looked like the Singer that everybody's wanted him to look like, okay? If Brad Keller can tweak his stuff, have a good offseason, always getting calls in the middle of my dialogue.
You're cut off. I agree Brady Singer's been on a roll, right? Brady Singer has looked great through seven innings. But at the same time, I can't put him in the entire 162-game schedule as the number one.
No. Not yet. Sorry. What my before I got rudely interrupted by somebody who wasn't even on the other line. It was just a random call. What I was saying was, okay, let's say you bring Zach Greinke back in next year. Well, if you also have Singer, you also have Keller, Bubich, and Lynch. And if Zerpa can come back and feel it, because Zerpa was looking great. But you go out and get a number one, what is Zach Greinke, your three, your four? If Singer can really solidify himself as a number two?
I would hope Zach Greinke, if you're really wanting to build a great rotation next year, which I have my doubts.
Yes,
right.
I do too.
Still, Brady Singer, I think, is starting to show the guy that he can be. I think Daniel Lynch is starting to show that he's a guy that has the stuff. Chris Bubich, he's shown consistency. But when you're talking about a full season, you need a number one. And for Zach Greinke being 39 next year, if he's a number three, I still am not very confident in that rotation. If Zach Greinke's a five, the number five guy in your rotation next year, I have better thoughts about it.
That's a good rotation.
Because I think that would take two signings in the offseason. Now, I don't want the Royals to do what the Rangers did, where you
fork over
$500 million to three guys, and the Rangers are 12 games under 500. Like, and now those guys are on the books for the next decade. Like, I don't want the Royals to do that. If they're going to put money and a lot of money into a certain position, it's got to be pitching. Because right now, I think the weak spots are, well, third base, yes, because they don't have a true third baseman on the roster. They'll play Bobby Witt Jr. there, who's a shortstop. They'll play Nicky Lopez there, who's a shortstop and second baseman. They'll play Hunter Dozier there, who was a drafted shortstop, played first base in the outfield and third base, but he's not a homegrown third base guy, which not many are. But if you're going to build this lineup, right, it's not going to be all rookies. They played five rookies last night. If they wanted to, they could play six or seven rookies a night. That's not going to happen next year. They're going to go out and get guys that can help this lineup, help provide some protection for the young guys at the top of the order, the young guys at the bottom of the order, because you can't win more than 65 games with seven rookies. And a part of their developmental process is giving them confidence that they can hit really well. And you can't hit really well if you have no protection. Right? Right now, I think Bobby Wood Jr. has great protection in the lineup, hitting ahead of Salvador Perez. Like, Nick Prado's protection is Michael Massey. And I think Michael Massey would be a great hitter. He's not there yet because they're all rookies. They're going to go through the growing pains. So where the Royals need to spend money, I'd love to see them go out and get a number one next year, a true number one, a 200 innings guy, or 200 plus for that matter. You know, go out and get your James Shields. That can give you six, seven innings, two out of three starts. I think everybody would be wanting that. And I guarantee that would help Brady Singer's trajectory, that would help Chris Bubich's trajectory, and Daniel Lynch's. And those are the young guys of the future of this rotation. I think more so for Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch, but hey, I'm tipping my cap to Chris Bubich because he's been a guy that has shown consistency since returning from Omaha. 12 starts, ERA is sub 4. So the rotation's been better, but now you can take it to the next level. You really got to add in some guys that have been there, done it before. A Pitbull reference right there. Been there, done that. Get a guy that's thrown 220 innings out there. I haven't taken a look at the full free agent list, but I'm tired of the rental guys. I'm tired of the one-year deal guys. Go out and spend a good amount of money that you will have going into the offseason and try to be a little bit more competitive. Because right now, we love the young core. We love the youth movement. But the next part of that youth movement is giving them a chance to win some games. This offseason will be their first chance to do so. All right, that'll wrap up our first hour. When we come back, we'll have two special guests in studio. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday you are listening to. Got a little Rock the Cash by the Clash, but I have got two good friends in here in the studio today. That is John Schieser and Two Rob Rock. And, of course, I'm going to get a phone call during this. But
phone lines are done.
One second.
Phone's off, and the producer walks in with his phone's on. All right, make sure mine's off. Dude, this is going to be a fun segment if you come in with the Clash. Like, we're going to have a good time. But
this is kind of how the radio.
He took the call.
This has happened, okay. The last, like, 15 minutes. He's getting calls, and it's, like, right at the worst time. It's right when he's talking, too.
I don't want to say this, but somebody better be dead on the other side.
The good thing is we have flexibility for this segment here. You know, sometimes it goes 10 minutes, sometimes it goes 25 minutes because we're open. This is how we run our shows here.
That's why I like the show. It's fun.
Yeah, we just keep it kind of open-ended, right? And we like to have the phone lines open, but at the end of the day, we also want to close them off, and I think he just forgot to close them off. But Blake actually had a good leading question. But you know what? We're just going to get into the interview to start off with.
I'm looking at his face. It looks like they just canceled his pizza order.
He's concerned at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. He's trying to realize. This mic's still on, too, so we can still hear.
You can hear the mic. So we'll just get right into it here. Yeah, let's just hear a little bit about both you guys here and your background in comedy.
For sure. Well, I originally started in Kansas City years ago at the old Stanford & Sons down in Westport before they relocated a million times. And just relocated back to Kansas City last summer and been back about a year and really loving it, and did comedy at the Comedy Store, toured around the country, but LA just got a little, people ask me, like, how bad was LA? I'll be like, bad enough that I moved back to Kansas City bad. I mean, nothing, I love it here, but it just got a little too iffy. There's people, homeless people everywhere, way less homeless people in Kansas City.
Yeah, speaking of homeless people, you know it's not PC to say homeless anymore?
What? I did not. I didn't read that.
Yeah, it's no longer PC to say homeless anymore. The correct term now is unhoused.
Unhoused?
Okay. Unhoused, okay. Which sounds
I'll
way
say
more,
unhoused then.
Yeah, you should.
An unhoused person.
An unhoused
not
person.
Not an unsheltered.
It's unhoused. That's the correct term now. Which sounds way more messed up than homeless to me. Like, homeless sounds like it can be by choice. Unhoused, not so much, right? Unhoused sounds like what my ex-wife and her lawyer did to me. Right? They unhoused the heck out of me is what they did. That's how unhoused should be used, not for the people on the street.
Which, by the way, Tarab's headlining the Casual Comedy Show Tuesday at the Casual Animal Brewery at the Crossroads.
Yes, sorry.
That's why we're here.
I got
this guy's funny, and he's doing a lot of stage time at Casual Animal on Tuesday night.
So you're hosting the show, correct?
Yeah.
Are you doing the MC work?
Yeah, I produce and host the show. So when I moved back to Kansas City last summer, I went around town, went to the CCKC, the KC Comedy Club Kansas City over on State Line, and just immediately there was a ton of talent, like a lot of really funny people here in town. And
funny looking or just funny?
There's some really ugly people, and they lean on that for laughs. And I can't hate, you know what? God gives everyone different cards to play. But you can win the World Series of Poker with, a pair of deuces if you play it right.
It's true.
So there's some ugly, funny people is what I'm saying. So I just was like, man, no one's getting long sets. It's 10 minutes. It's 7. Mm. It's 12. So I structured this show to give people longer sets so they can develop, and then be ready for that first headlining spot if they haven't done it already, or just stay fresh for their next gig at the Looney Bin or the Improv or wherever it may be. But the big thing, like, in listeners, there are killers, very funny comics here in Kansas City. The only difference between them and New York is that they're responsible. They take care. Like I would meet comics in LA, know them for 8 years, and then find out they had like two daughters in Austin. I'm like, what? You had two kids? You never mentioned them in 8 years. Like, you're a horrible person.
That one time.
You're a
you
horrible
said, I
person.
Haven't seen them. Have you seen them?
No, I haven't seen pictures. This was during Facebook. Not even like a birthday post. Nothing. Just soulless. So I was immediately thinking, like, all right, well, I'm going to put together a fantastic show, and I think this will be our 10th show. It runs twice a month on the 2nd and 4th Tuesday at the Casual Animal. Starts at 7, ends at 8:30. People are home by, 9:15.
Now, can they buy tickets? Is it just show up, come as you are?
I'd never liked the idea of charging someone to watch comedy at a bar. So it's actually, I do it on a donation basis. Like, we're lucky.
Oh, really?
We've got the regulars, so I know I can kind of expect. But we're averaging about 40 to 60 people per show. And so it's really great. I've been getting a lot of positive feedback from all the comics that have been working it. And then when out of town people, like friends from the Comedy Store and stuff like that, come through town. Since it is a Tuesday, I try to, negotiate them to come into KC a little early, stop by the show, do guest spots, stuff like that. I just want to make sure that my friends, when they come through the Midwest, know that they've got stage time waiting for them if they want it.
Well, it's good to have it set up kind of you've got your home base now here. It's good to have you like, hey, there's a comfy place y'all can come hang out at. We can see some good comedy. Now, when you talked about getting donations, I'm assuming, can you also just donate John and to Rob drinks?
Casual Animal does a great job of donating those already for us. But if you want to just buy us drinks in the form of just giving us money, and we'll just say, yeah, we'll spend this on alcohol, then that's a way to go. We can go too.
Gotcha. Now, you've been doing comedy for how long, John?
I started in 2001, a few months before 9/11, and then moved out to LA in like 2005, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Turab, how long have you been doing comedy, and what got you into comedy?
So I've been doing comedy since 2018. Haven't been doing it that long.
So fresh.
Yeah, I'm pretty fresh. I actually started on a dare. One of my buddies down in Florida, he dared me to get up on an open mic, and been doing it since then.
So you were obviously killer as soon as you hit the mic, right? First time.
The first time went very well for me because my buddy bombed so poorly that there was no way for me to mess up. I couldn't mess up after that. Yeah, so it's been great.
No, Tarab stood out immediately. He was one of the guys that he actually ended up, Monisha Williams, who's a killer here in town, mm-hmm. just waiting to become a star when she gets that opportunity. But she was like, hey, can I get a guest spot for my friend? I'm like, absolutely. And which was supposed to be 5 minutes. 8 minutes into his set, he's like, did I get the light? And I'm like, nope, they're all laughing. Keep going, please. Why would I take you off stage? You're crushing.
Did you just not hear them laughing, or were you so nervous that you just blocked everything out?
Because
we're supposed to, make sure that we've, you know, pay attention to the light. So I wasn't trying to break any rules.
Gotcha.
You know, so, but he didn't give me the light because, you know, the crowd was laughing. So just, you know, wanted to make sure I was following the rules.
As a responsible show producer, I'm like, why am I, this guy's destroying the room. Yeah, let's wrap it up. You're having too much, the audience is loving it too much. It's not fair for the rest of the comics, okay? Scale it back.
So now before I got rudely interrupted in your guys' intro, which I apologize for. It's hard being on this side and having to deal with the phone at the same time. But now, what's your guys' lineup? Do you guys have looks like you guys have a lineup card already with Casey Griffin and Brock Bristow. Those are gonna be joining you guys as well.
Yep,
as well as to Rob.
The Super Ginger Brock Bristow will be opening, and then I'll be hosting, like I said. But yeah, he'll be, it goes 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then Rob will be doing 30 plus.
Is Rob the headliner?
Yeah, he does whatever he wants.
Okay.
That's the kind of rule. He gets whatever time he wants on stage.
There we go. Jack, what's going on?
So I know you guys both started different times in comedy, but when you started, did you have anybody you tried to model yourself after, or even how you presented certain jokes when you became a comic?
I tried to, like, Dave Chappelle is my favorite. But same, there's no way I could touch him. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try to do my own thing, just be unique, and because he's unique, right? Mm-hmm. So, hey, that's the way I went with it.
So. I'm an 80s kid, so like I grew up, it was like Carlin, you know, Eddie Murphy. I would say SNL stuff, like that 92, 93 cast of SNL, which they always say your favorite SNL season's the one when you're 12. So that was, you know, for me, but a lot of my comedy kind of came from that kind of stuff.
Now, I think it's interesting because some people are funny, right? They can be funny around their friends. You're not performing in front of people you don't know. So how do you push down those nerves sometimes when you're walking into a room that you may not know anybody out there, but you're trying to get them to laugh?
It's actually easier when you don't know anyone
really
out there. Yeah, because it's less embarrassing if you do bomb, which doesn't happen a lot, just to put that out there. But you just get to a certain point, Rob will agree with this, where you just, it's a confidence thing, and you're just, and you know the stuff works. It's been proven at other shows. So if you do have a bad set, you're like, all right, that's on the audience. You know, and if you're working out new stuff, it's new stuff. So don't put that much pressure on yourself. You know what I mean?
So I guess as far as if you're trying to compare nerves, because obviously you guys were both athletes, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
When you have, did you have more nerves when you were playing sports? Did you have more nerves when you're going up to do comedy?
Comedy.
Is it because you're trying to make more of a profession out of it now? So you got like,
right? I knew sports was never going to take me anywhere. With these knees, I knew sports wasn't going to take me anywhere. So yeah, I'm focusing more on
it. I think for me it was sports because I blew two game-winning layups in basketball in my career. So like, dude, wide open two, and I just hit the top of the square off the front of the. So yeah, sports actually for me it was more nerve-wracking than comedy.
Well, hey, at least you don't have anybody relying on you now for that. You know what I mean? Like that was a whole team going, Jesus,
I know,
John, you missed the.
My wife's totally cool with me making $17,000 a year doing comedy. Trust me, it's not a problem at all.
Well, and from what I know from us, you know, so John and I know each other is, but we've been working together recently during the summer at our other job when we're not both being funny.
Oh man,
guys,
I was hoping you were going to pretend like I was professional, but yeah, I clean pools during the day like a slave because with this guy over here
in the heat,
who is also a super ginger.
Yes, I was gonna say, you said something about a super ginger. I said that's pretty much you and me, buddy.
Yeah, no, Brock is paler than you somehow. And he wears red suits to make it pop somehow. I don't know, it's weird.
The translucent skin really just vibrates off the red.
But dude, we get in some really good sports talks, you know.
Oh yeah,
the day.
Well, we've always got 810 on in the car, and we're listening to sports all the time. And so as far as like what you guys have going on, this is every second and fourth Tuesday, right?
Yep.
Second and fourth Tuesday. So do you get a lot of like crossovers now, like where you draw your comedy from? Do you get anything from sports? Do you guys get any, like, where's your material draw from? Or is it just everyday life stuff?
Everyday life stuff for me. Yeah. Not so much sports anymore.
No, it's the everyday life. You just walk down the street, something pops out, and you're like, oh, that's weird. And then, and he's got this vision too, because I've seen him on stage, but you just see things differently, and you're just able to just, it's the hardest part is just describing to the general public how you saw it and why it's unique that way, you know, and that's why some people can, you know, look at a stick of butter and make a 5-minute joke out of it, you know what I mean? It's like, but as far as comedy and sports jokes, I only have one, and that's like, I really, questioned the Wilt Chamberlain, the 15,000.
Mm-hmm. Of raucous
right?
lovemakers?
15,000, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was, because I'm looking at that number, 15,000. Like, chances are, you know, maybe at least seven of those were dudes. I'm just saying. They just stuck. He didn't know.
They slipped in there?
Yeah. I mean, because look, that's a lot of people, you know? And I don't know. Can I say that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't cuss.
Didn't say that.
And it was kind of vague. Okay. I'm just saying, seven out of 15, that's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of 15.
It's a very small number.
Yeah.
You know? Who knows?
Look, I'm just like, you're what? That's a, just, I'll let it go. There.
I could see that. Number could be higher, honestly.
Yeah, and I have a different, more, you know, vulgar version of that.
Well, you can
hey,
see
we have
that.
A failsafe. Yeah, he's got a little
I've
red
got
button,
the dump
back
button
there.
Back here, just in case. Okay. Don't
so
worry.
If you cuss, not promoting it, but he can't. He does have a failsafe.
Well,
it's happened.
My parents are on their way to Cincinnati right now, so I'm hoping they're like Concordia and
couldn't hear
it.
It's static now.
Yeah.
It's static.
Yeah.
Well, since we do get into all these talks while we're, you know, doing our other professional jobs, what is your guys' outlook as far as, one, all this talks about bringing Kansas City Royal Stadium down into the downtown? So you guys are going to have even more pop and nightlife down in downtown Kansas City. What's your outlook on that? Is that going to be something that you're interested in? Is that going to look weird in the city? Like, what do you guys think about that?
I'll let you. I'm not a KC. I'm from Alabama,
okay.
So I'm not originally from here.
So
I really don't have a stake in the game.
Are you Roll Tide or are you?
Oh, dude,
War
say
Eagle.
That to me. War Eagle, sir.
Oh man, I was torn at first just because of just all the memories. I remember getting Jim Eisenreich's autograph out back, the player's exit, and like when I was in second grade with my dad, and just I flew back in town for the wild card game, and was there for the playoffs, and great, incredible memories. And if you've ever gone to a game with someone that's not from Kansas City, their jaw will drop when they walk in. Oh my gosh, look at the fountains. This is incredible. And that was from the beginning. That isn't just some new rehab thing. Like, the stadium looks incredible, which the dimensions were modeled after Dodger Stadium, along with the logo insignia. That's where the royal blue thing, which made it really convenient when I became a Dodgers fan. But the stadium downtown, I lived in San Diego. I loved the access to Petco. I did live in downtown San Diego, and I live in downtown Kansas City now, so I'm kind of all for it. I think it'll bring in just that minimum 15, 20,000. There's a lot of people that are moving downtown that don't live there already. You can walk there. That train, every month they're pushing another couple blocks south into Westport, so that's going to be easy access for another 5, 10,000 people. But all that, none of that matters unless we're playing 500 baseball. Unless the end of August rolls around and we're three games out of the wild card. You know, we're just competing. That's the most important thing. So the new stadium will be nice. It'll draw fans for 2 years. But if the team's horrible, they'll stay in Lee Summit. They'll stay in Liberty.
Well, then real quick before we get you guys out of here, speaking of kind of the future and what it holds for Kansas City Royals, what's your take on the new crop of guys and what's your outlook hopefully for maybe next season? Or the next couple seasons, really.
I'm tired of playing this game of next year's the year. And so I don't know. I love where Bubic is kind of developing. Singers, all of a sudden, a strikeout pitcher pitching really well. Daniel Lynch had a good outing. I think that's really the success is going to depend on the young pitching. It seems like they're coming along. But I'll just say 500. Every year I put a $40 bet on the Royals in Vegas to win the World Series because it pays out.
Hey,
it pays out like $60,000.
It's a great throwaway $40.
Yeah, and I still have my winning one from 15 frame.
There you go.
Anyway, I didn't win as much because they had good odds back then. But no, I'm all for the stadium though. Just I think it's something where the city's going in that direction with the riverfront development. The city's going to look completely different downtown in probably 5-10 years. So I'm all for growth and. Mr. Sherman, let's do it. Cut that ribbon.
Let's
ground.
Do it. I want to see money. I want to see money dollars spent. I want his eyes to have the money signs in them while he goes out and get maybe a big ace, maybe two aces this offseason. You know what I mean?
I say Max Scherzer went to MU. Let's bring him in for some Twilight.
Homecoming.
Years.
Bring him home.
Oh, one thing. I want Joe Madden. Let's get Matheny out.
Joe Madden or Joe Madden with the Mohawk?
Both. I'll take both. He's great with young players. He's proven it twice in Chicago and in Tampa. We got a super young core of players. He didn't work in it. Pujols isn't listening to Matt. You know what? In Angels, like a bunch of veterans, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Shave your head. Big deal.
Well, the Angels have a lot more problems on their hands right now. They can't win games with arguably two of the best players. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's Trout or Otani on the field. I got two questions, one for each of you guys. This one I got more for an Auburn question for you.
Yes.
But for you, when you living in L.A. and living in Kansas City, How do the baseball fan bases compare? Because you know in L.A., of course, there's Angels and Dodgers. I'd say Dodgers a little bit more passionate.
I would say Dodgers 90%. Mm-hmm. And I miss the Dodgers games. You would pump gas with a Dodgers hat on and start talking about Julio Urias' start last night. Just with some random guy. And this is L.A. where people mm-hmm. do not talk to each other. But there's a Dodgers camaraderie.
Yeah.
And I miss that in Kansas City. I try to strike up Royals conversations
it's
with
tough.
People. They look like I'm crazy. They're like, well, why are you talking to me? I'm like, because we're the only two guys in Hy-Vee right now that have Royals shirts on. What do you mean, why am I talking to you? You got an old school John Buck shirt on. You know your stuff. Come on.
You've been around the block, man.
Yeah. Like, I got this at one of the giveaways, the T-shirt Tuesday giveaways, man. I'm not a Royals fan.
No, that's a great Monarch jersey right there.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
But that will come back. And yeah. I think, and John Sherman, from what I've read, is really trying to get into the community with programs and different organizations and just get people caring again. But it all starts on the field with winning. So I think Royals fans, it's going to get better.
We hope so. It's got to get better at some point.
It will.
Because we know it was a euphoric feeling when both the Chiefs and the Royals, same parking lot, were winning a lot of damn games. Now, this is going to be quite a jump here, but I got to ask you at least one Auburn question. Because, of course, up here, we don't spend too much time on Auburn or Alabama unless we're talking about the college football playoffs. But where were you when the kick six happened with Chris Davis? And what do you remember? If you can walk us through where you were and what happened.
I was living in Valdosta, Georgia at the time. I was in my bedroom, and I was watching the TV, watching the game. And when he ran it back, I woke up everyone in the house. Everyone else was sleeping. I ran through the house screaming because, one, I don't know if you've dealt with any Alabama fans before, but they are the worst.
Kind of like KU basketball fans.
I was going to say, like KU basketball yeah. fans, man.
Yeah, if Alabama wins, they have that good winners. They're not good losers. If Alabama loses, it's always an excuse. It's never like, oh, they had a bad game. It's like, well,
the refs.
It was refs or
something. Only that guy wouldn't have dropped that pass, man. Yeah.
That wasn't a fact. That wasn't a flag.
But yeah, I enjoyed that so much. That year was my year. Yeah,
it should be. That might be the best college football game I've ever seen.
Yeah, I actually
ending,
just watched that clip 2 days ago just to refresh.
Pumped up.
We just played a game. There. So the game we're gonna play after this is we played a game called What a Moment, where I play an audio clip of a special moment in sports, and him and the callers have to guess what that moment is. And we played that one the other day, the kick six or whatever. So
I got that one easy.
He got it easy. He knew exactly. He knew the
give
score,
me
the
Auburn
the
broadcast.
Time,
give me Vern Lundquist. Doesn't matter. I'll have it nailed.
It was
down.
Awesome. It was awesome. Well, Rob and John, where can guys find you if they want to go? Where can the fans in Kansas City find you guys when they want to go check out stuff for your comedy and anything else?
Drop.
Oh, you could check me out on Facebook, to Rob Cook Comedy, and then there's Instagram, to Rob M F and Cook.
There we go.
There we go.
Yeah.
John?
J-O-N is here, T-O-O. J-O-N, John is here, too. And then also, I would just, if you follow Casual Animal Brewing on Instagram, they do a great job of helping us promote the show and reposting, and they'll tag all of us in it. So that's probably your easiest. Follow Casual Animal. They'll post our stuff, and then we'll all be friends.
Hell yeah. Making the community stronger.
Just like we are. We're friends
there we go.
Now.
Best friends.
Podcast
can we just
style,
become
maybe.
Best friends?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Well, that's Casual Comedy at the Casual Animal Brewing
yes,
Company.
Sir.
On Tuesday, 7 o'clock, be there or be square. Go and support these guys, local comedians. Also local sports fans, man. That's awesome. Guys, I appreciate you guys coming in. This was awesome.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Thank
is
you
awesome.
For having us.
Appreciate it. That's sports. That's John Sheezer and 2 Rob Rock. They will be the comedians live at the Casual.
Cook.
To Rob Cook.
To Rob Cook. I'm sorry.
We were talking about
you
Chris
can,
Rock.
You can yeah. give me the Rock last
Shout
name.
Out to Rick
I think
Ingram.
That might boost me.
Well, one thing real quick. Rick Ingram opening for Chris Rock World Tour. Kansas City native. Funniest guy to ever come out of Kansas City. Chris Rick Ingram.
Boom.
Perfect.
You heard it right here. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got What a Moment right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders. Special thanks to Rob Cook and John Sheezer, who were just in studio. That's one of our first in-studio interviews. We always doing over the phone, but those two guys were great. Great bits. And you can catch them at Casual Animal Comedy Club. So
Casual Animal Brewing Company.
Brewing Company, excuse me, not Comedy Club.
See, there's a lot of season alliteration that go on here. It's Casual Animal Brewing Company, and it's a casual comedy night. There you
casual
go.
Casual comedy. That's where I was getting mixed up there.
That's like
but
quadruple C right there.
That caught me off guard, too. I know they had informed us a little bit about what bit they were going to do. That caught me off guard, and that got me laughing. So, but one thing we're going to do here, because we are a little bit late on it, we're going to finish out the show with it. Of course, our What a Moment game. We promised you, the listeners, we'd be doing it. And we do have two $20 gift cards to Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen. You can only win one of them. We'll have two winners today. Here's how it's going to work. You can call into the studio at 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. Here's how the game's going to go. If you've heard it before, Blake is going to play an audio from some sports moment in history. You, the caller, will have the first guess. Okay, so if you call in and you have the first guess and you get it right, you win the gift card. As simple as that. He'll play that audio. You get it right. You'll come and pick up this gift card at the studio. We'll be in contact with you. We'll get your number. Blake will get your number and everything. You'll come on down the studio, pick it up Monday, Tuesday, whatever next week you want to do it. If you get it wrong, though, unfortunately, we've got to cut you off. We've got to get you off the line. We're going to give their chance to somebody else to win this gift card. So we're going to wait to play it. Until the phone rings, we'll give it about 5 or 6 minutes.
We'll give
it
5 or 6 minutes.
Somebody, if nobody does, we'll just
boom.
We got a caller in right here. So this will be our first chance, our first caller to win the $20 Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen gift card. Again, you can come pick that up at the studio Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week, whenever you want to. Blake will get your number and everything like that. But that's how the game's going to go. He's just going to play an audio from a special moment in history. You get it right, you get the gift card. You get it wrong, he's hanging up. So first things first, we're going to go to Johnny. Not yet, excuse me. Blake's getting about a couple phone calls right now. So hoping we get a couple guys in a row. And I do apologize. We want you to win it, by the way. We want you to win it. That's how we're going to be playing What a Moment. Here we go every single Saturday. So now we're going to go to the phone line. Johnny, are you ready to play What a Moment? What a Moment, excuse me.
All right, let's do this, man. I'm ready.
All right, here we go. First one, Johnny. Let's see what we got here.
All right.
1 second.
Stalling, man. You should have been more prepared for this play.
Along the sideline, another one. They're still in deep trouble at midfield. They tried to do a couple of... The ball is still loose as they get it to Rogers. They give it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going into the end zone. The band!
All right, Johnny, does that moment in sports sound familiar?
Yes, I do. That's the band on the field. And is it, am I supposed to name the game?
Yeah, give me everything you can about that moment.
Give us the teams.
Okay, here we go. Band on the field, 19, old video, VHS, so it's 4:3 aspect ratio. You've got the grainy video, and he's running on, the band's on the field, the game's not over, he runs into the end zone. It's a little bit of a... the call seems a little bit more than it is because the band is coming, a little bit less. But, man, what a call. I think he runs into a tuba player, lays a guy
out. He does.
Out.
Johnny, do you know the two teams playing, I guess, is the better question.
Okay, I'm sorry. So here we go. I think, man, I know. Is Michigan one of them? I'm going to say Michigan and Ohio State.
Unfortunately, Johnny, those are not the two teams we're looking for. It is Stanford and Cal.
Stanford, damn it. Okay, well.
You had the moment. We knew you were going where the moment was, but we were looking for the teams there. So, Johnny, my man, I'm sorry.
I appreciate you playing, Johnny. Thank you. Call back anytime, my man.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Later.
We got our second piece of audio and our second caller. We're going to go to Eric. Eric, are you ready to play What a Moment?
Let's do it.
All right. So, for Eric, obviously, we've already done the Cal versus Stanford. So what that was Cal versus Stanford. Band on the field. Final play of the game was fantastic. We've got another one here. Let's see if we can get you on this one.
The snap. He drops straight back. Has some time. Now he scrambles away from one hit. Looks. Uncorks a deep one for the end zone. Phelan is down there.
Oh, he got it!
Did he get it?
He got it!
Touchdown! 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 Touchdown, Boston College!
All right. Eric?
So that was what? Doug Flutie, Hail Mary, like 1984?
Yes, sir. Do you know who they were playing?
Oh, okay. This one's going to be tough.
I'll give you this. You got it right.
You did get it right. You got the play.
Doug Flutie played for which team?
Boston College.
There you go. Okay, so you got pretty much all of it right now. I just wanted to know if – give me a little extra, see if you knew who they were playing at the time.
I want – it's ACC, so I'm going to go with Miami.
Boom!
Bingo, bingo, bingo. We got a winner. Eric, you are a winner of this $20 Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen gift card. Blake will get your number. You can come pick it up at the studio this week. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
Let me put you on a quick hold, all right, Eric?
Okay.
Fantastic. Eric got all three of those right. Got our first winner.
We're going to keep the phone lines open because we still got one more $20 gift card to give away. You can call in now to the studio at 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810.
Eric hit every single one of those. It was 1984, Boston College, Doug Flutie, Hail Mary, and they were playing Miami. Good
Perfect.
Job,
that sir. Perfect. That was some extra credit right there. And here, I want to give a little bit more context in this game as we're rolling on with it, because you may be going, okay, well, what happens if I don't get it right and Jack gets it wrong as well? Well, then we'll go to the next piece of audio. So you'll get another chance. And this is where you'll have the option of picking number one. If you don't know it, you can defer to me, and if I get it wrong, then we go to the next one. But if you want to take your shot and get it right, here's what we're looking for. Of course, you can describe the moment. You can give us the year. You can give us the players involved. But you have to have, to get it right, to win this gift card, two of the teams. You got to get two teams. So we do have another call on the line. This will be for another chance to win our $20 gift card to Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen. So as soon as Blake puts it on my call screen right here, we'll send it to our next caller. But congratulations again to Eric for winning our first $20 Jazz Louisiana Kitchen gift card. And we're going to be doing this every single Saturday. More often than not, at 10:25. But if we run a little bit long, we're always going to be able to get to it, and we'll be giving away free gift cards. Not just the Jazz's. We'll bounce it around a little bit. I think we've got some Schlotsky's gift card. We got some Red Door gift cards. We want to give you, the listeners, a chance to win some stuff and not just bragging rights. We're going to go back to the phone lines. John, are you ready to play What a Moment?
You got it. I was those first two were right in my wheelhouse, so I'm hoping you're on the same.
Let's
same
hope path. This third one is
we'll
as too,
see.
John.
I'm always jumping all over. So, John, here is your What a Moment.
It is a distinct possibility that this is his last at bat of 1998. But take a good long look. This is going to have to last you until next March in Florida. First and third, two out.
Wow. All right.
Wow. I got a lousy phone, and I'm driving, so I could barely hear you.
You want me to play it again for you, John?
If you don't mind.
I don't mind. That's a, well, I'm
we looking want
for
you to win this gift card, so we're going to give you the advantage. We're playing it again.
One more time.
All right.
It is a distinct possibility that this is his last at-bat of 1998. Take a good long look. This is going to have to last you until next March in Florida. First and third, two out.
Oh! Into the field! Number 70! How much more can you...
All right. Could you hear it that time,
Joe
John?
Carter, is that Joe Carter hitting the home run to win the World Series?
Ah, that is not Joe Carter. I'll give you another guess real quick, because it's right sport, obviously, but let's see if we can get you going here.
1998. I heard that.
Uh-huh.
God.
And think about home run number 70. Kurt.
Oh, my God. Martin McGuire. No, I blew it.
Boom. Ding, ding,
you
ding.
You got it.
It
was Mark McGuire.
70th home run. The reason I did that is because it could have also been a Barry Bonds or anything
Sammy
like
Sosa.
That. Sammy Sosa. So I'm glad. So there we go. That's another winner right there.
I kind of cheated, but I'll take it.
That's right. You know what we'll do? We'll give you this win, John, and then we're also going to give another $20 gift card. We'll get one more caller in here. So,
of course.
John, congratulations. Thanks so much for calling. We'll get your information. And, again, thanks for participating on What a Moment.
Thanks for having me.
Still, the phone lines are open. 913-3810-810. That's 913-3810-810. We're going to have one more gift card to give away, and we're going to have one more moment to go over. And I know we kind of gave a little bit of a hint, Gave a little bit of help there, mainly because we're trying to squeeze it in here in the final little bit of the show. Usually when you call in and try to participate on What a Moment, we're going to give you as much help as we can because we want to give away these gift cards. But so far we have two winners, and Eric and John. We have one more piece of audio to play. And again, call in as many times as you want. Give yourself another chance to win. And we will have another $20 gift card from Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen to give away. So as soon as Blake hangs up the phone, I believe we got two callers on the line here. But we want to give away one more before we wrap up the show. If you only had one guest in the beginning part of the show, I do apologize that we didn't give you a little bit of extra help. But we have to give away these gift cards. We're wanting to give away these gift cards. And again, here's how it's going to work. You get it wrong, and I get it wrong, we get on to the next piece of audio. You get it right, you win the gift card. You get close to the answer, we'll give you a little bit of help. All right, back to the phone lines. Todd, are you ready to play What a Moment?
Ready to try.
All right, Todd, let's see what we got here for you. This is your What a Moment.
Situations like this is try for the quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Do you have an answer for us, Todd?
Duke, Kentucky. Greatest college basketball game ever.
There you go. Congratulations, Todd. You are our third and final winner of the Jazz's Louisiana gift card. It's $20 to Jazz's. Blake will get your information. You can come pick it up at the studio next week. Again, thanks for participating on What a Moment, Todd, and congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So that will wrap up our What a Moment segment. We had the phone lines blowing up during that segment. But here's the thing. Blake and I have shows on Sports Radio 10 on Saturday. We also will have it on Wednesday. And since the high call volume that we have, at least today, we weren't expecting a high call volume for this. But we appreciate all of you listening, wanting to win this. That's how we're going to do it. Every Saturday. And now that I think about it, we might even incorporate it into our Wednesday show. So usually Wednesday from 7 to 9 or 7 to 10, Blake and I will be back on. And we're likely going to bring back up What a Moment. Because this is the type of interaction we want. We want to give away these gift cards. We want you, the listeners, to have a reason to call in, give us your thoughts, share your sports knowledge. But for all the winners today, I believe it was Eric, Todd, and John, be sure to come on down to the studio this coming week to pick up your Jazz's Louisiana gift card. Jazz's Louisiana Kitchen, that is. And it's not always going to be Jazz's. We're going to try to get as many different gift cards for you throughout the week so we can have some variety. You know, because you can only, I guess, go to one restaurant so many times.
That is true. I'll tell you what, juggling the phone and the audio and trying to get the next person on the line as a one-man team over here is...
We need some bumper music, too, for
yeah.
What a Moment to get it
going.
The
reason
I
did is because we're also playing audio, so I was like,
it's tough.
I'd be doing a lot over here. But
that
is
true.
Next time, what I'll do is I'll have it prepackaged and we'll be even
Now, one
even
thing I feel bad about, one thing I feel really bad about...
About the first caller.
Yes.
I realized what you did there.
And I said, well, that's not fair.
Well, what was our first caller was Johnny Mack, right?
Johnny Mack was our first caller.
Yes,
so,
and he missed it, and technically we should have thrown it to you, and you do it. So, Johnny, call back in real quick. If you're still listening, Johnny, call back in, and I'll get you taken care of, all right?
That
because
sounds good.
Technically,
you get another guess, because that wasn't
fair enough for you.
That was not fair
for
Johnny Mack.
So, Johnny, if you're listening, go ahead and call back in.
Johnny Mack, you're done listening. You're done with the day. You're pissed off that we didn't give you a second chance. You can call in, you'll get the first shot next week, and we'll give you one of those gift cards if you get it right. But we will make sure that you will get on the show next time we get What a Moment. I believe Johnny Mack was listening, so he's going to be back on the line here and get one more chance. One more chance, because that just wasn't fair, was it? That was not fair to give one caller another chance, but not Johnny Mack. So as soon as Blake gets him on hold, that is what we will have to wrap up the show. Now, I got to make sure that he's even got some audio lined up. Because this might be over five now at this point. So as long as Blake, I'm trying to stall here because Blake's still on the phone. He's got to find a piece of audio. And maybe even Johnny Mack is just going to call next time. But do we have Johnny Mack, Blake?
We do have Johnny. You want to put Johnny back on the line?
All right. Johnny, can you hear me?
Johnny, did you hang up on us?
No, I'm there.
Okay, you're here. And we apologize for not giving you a second guess.
No, I was telling Blake I'm honored to be the inaugural participant
there you go.
Of this amazing show. So
I get to tell everybody and all my friends I was the first participant in this.
And we wronged you.
I don't even need the card. It's just an honor to be the first
it's just
one.
It's a badge of honor for you, John.
It is a badge of honor.
That's what I was looking for. Yes. So huge fan of the show, you guys.
Well, I appreciate that.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you. We always love seeing what our listeners are doing, how they're interacting with the show. And, yes, you do get the badge of first inaugural caller of What a Moment. So that don't ever let that moment live you down.
And you
right?
were damn close, too, and we still didn't give you it. We're going to give you one more chance. One more
badge
chance.
Badge of honor.
Yeah, badge of honor and one more chance to win this. So okay. do you have audio lined up?
I am out of audio at the moment.
You're out of audio.
So what we'll do is we'll give Johnny the first call next Saturday.
Okay, can you do that, Johnny?
Oh, I'm up every Saturday, you guys. It's my favorite show, so I'm the man.
Woo! Hell yeah, we love to hear it, Johnny. Well, thanks so much for your support, and we will make sure at 10:25 next Saturday, you're going to be the one who is first up to bat leadoff on What a Moment.
On my iPhone, I am setting an alarm for Saturday at 10:20.
Perfect. That's all I love to hear.
That's going
to
work.
You're waking up with Blake and Jack, baby.
You got it, my guys. You guys, I've been a fan of 810. I've been listening every day for probably 25 years. It's unbelievable. It's 100 years of this amazing radio station you guys work at. I'm in television. I've worked in news at 3 or 4 different television stations. I'm a producer at Channel 19, so I'm kind of in the biz. And I think you guys are amazing. I know how hard it is to work that board, Blake. You're doing an amazing job, brother.
Hey, Johnny, I really appreciate that. It's the unsung heroes back here. But you know what? Anytime we get a little recognition, it's a badge, buddy. It's on honor.
You got it. 10:25 next Saturday. I will see you guys.
Yes, sir. Johnny Batten leadoff. Have a great weekend, Johnny.
All right. We'll see you guys.
There was Johnny Mack. Hey, we count Johnny Mack now as a guest. Dude, that counts as a guest segment.
Johnny's a friend.
A friend.
Johnny's a friend
supporter,
of the show.
A friend.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's – oh, I got a buddy that does that on the 1510 show, and he's my friend, but he uses that same terminology all the time. But that's the thing. We want you listeners to win stuff. We want you to win gift cards. We love the high call volume.
We want to have fun, man.
We want to have a lot of fun. And believe me, What a Moment is not the only game we'll be rolling out, especially the football season roll around. We'll get some buy or sell going. We're talking a lot of NFL because, folks – college football and NFL football are rolling up. They are about to kick off. We've already had one preseason game. In fact, Blake, I know you know this, but next Saturday, we will end our show an hour before the Chiefs kick off in Chicago.
Can't wait.
So we'll have plenty to go over. But as I mentioned, I think you were on the phone at the time, so I don't know if you heard me talking about it. We get the call volume like this. Why not bring What a Moment into Wednesdays?
We could.
Or a new game to give away more gift cards, because you know what? That's what
can't
we're,
be the same
we're
all the time,
men of the
Jack.
People. We're men of the people. Again, we had a jam-packed show today. We talked some Chiefs. We talked some Royals. We, of course, want to give a very special thanks to Rob Cook and John Sheezer. They were great in studio.
Fantastic.
Always love to have guests in studio.
Go check them out at what is it? The Animal Brewing Company?
Animal Brewing.
No, it's... dang it.
No, it's... It casual is Casual Animal Brewing Company, the comedy club.
Casual comedy.
Casual comedy.
That's
there you
mouth.
Go. That's a tongue twister. But anyways, big thanks to them. Go out and see them. We're going to try to have them on another segment here in the near future because they were great. We hope you enjoyed them as much as we did. All righty. That wraps up another edition of Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside the great Blake Schneiders. Coming up next, we have a best of right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.